Mike and Ron. Here to help. Here to help. Here to help. All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages.
Every single damn age you could possibly think of.
Hey, you know what, Mike? I realize that we've been discriminating against people who are short. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages, no matter how tall or short you are.
No, I don't want any short people listening.
Wow. But, listen, do you...
None.
We have to have short people.
Really? Why?
Yeah, because they're wonderful.
In what way?
Oh man, they're great to sleep with.
Okay, you got me.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
You won me on that.
I'm trying to tell you. Listen.
No, you don't have to tell me. That's you. Okay. Short dudes, no. Short women, yes.
Short dudes, yes.
If you're listening for Ron, you know what?
I'm trying to tell you, Mike and Ron are here to help.
Here to help.
We have everyone covered.
Right everyone here. Covered.
Yes, indeed.
We're literally.
Mike, I miss you.
I miss you as well.
Oh my God, we're having a bro moment right now.
We're having a bro moment. Big, big last couple days. We are actually
there has been.
Speaking. Mm. I want to make I don't know. You're obviously not a big sports person, but I want to make an announcement. I don't know if you guys. We're recording this the Monday, in which the mighty UConn Huskies. I am a proud alumni of the University of Connecticut. The UConn Huskies have just won their sixth national title in men's basketball.
Yes, yes.
And back-to-back, they're the back-to-back champions of men's college basketball.
I don't know about all that, but that's congratulations.
Yeah,
that's
you a win huge the whole, thing. Yeah. You think about how many schools play basketball in the whole country.
That's a big thing.
And they are the best. And the women...
The women, I knew about that.
Well, the women got screwed because they wanted to see Caitlin Clark... In the final, I don't care. I'm not a big conspiracy theory person, but if you weren't watching, here's what happened.
I wasn't.
First off, you want to get into this. This is very, very interesting.
Okay. We're here to help, ladies and gentlemen.
14 million people watched that game.
Preach.
UConn women versus Iowa because of Caitlin Clark, who is right now just, you know. I mean, you want to talk about the great white hope. She is the definition of the great. She's from Iowa. She's
white girl. Yeah.
30 points a game.
Good
everyone
family.
Good family. The dad, the mom.
Absolutely. I noticed that. All over the press.
Well, it's the same thing that UConn had
like
20, 30 years ago with Rebecca Lobo.
No, I agree with you because none of the black women were like that.
Yeah, I mean, they'll sit there.
None of the black women come from good families.
Well, not that I come from good families. But
you know what I'm saying. You know
the
what I'm
media
saying?
Totally doesn't grab on to them and say, oh, look at the all-American girl kind of deal. They'll just
zero press for the black woman.
Yeah, they'll just say, oh, look at this talented person. Right. Isn't she going to be great?
Correct.
And so what happened was...
You have to be thrown in prison.
Yeah.
Brittany Griner.
How about the fact that, we could jump around for that one.
Yeah, but we...
So if you didn't see the game...
Go ahead. Yeah, sorry.
30 seconds left. Mm-hmm. UConn's down by one. They're running an out-of-bounds play.
Right.
And they call... UConn's got the ball. They call an offensive foul on one of the players for UConn.
Oh, hell
A moving screen that legitimately... If this was a moving screen, there is no such thing as screens. And everyone on the... I'm going to still call it Twitter.
Yeah.
The Twitterverse... Including like LeBron James and all those guys who were watching the game, sat there point blank and said, "That's not a moving screen. That's complete bullshit.
Right?
How dare they do this?" And they got Caitlin Clark into the final game in which South Carolina beat the shit out of her anyway. Mm. But they got her into the final game,
right?
But here's the point I'd like to make, and this is 14 million people. Watch that game on Friday night.
It's a crazy number.
Crazy number. Just to give you an inclination on that number, I wanna bring up a tweet that I had saved. Let me.
I like
this.
How we're coming prepared, ladies and gentlemen.
Rarely do I come prepared.
Oh, I'm prepared. I got text messages. I got emails and shit that I've been sending myself.
Oh, good deal.
Oh
my
goodness.
I like that. Yeah. And how about this? The championship game. That was on Sunday, 18.7 million viewers.
Wow, right.
So you want to talk about, you know, about interest. See, because one of the things that people always kind of, especially male comics here in the in LA, they really shit on the WNBA.
They really do.
And they basically, their point being...
They're doing it on Saturday Night Live, also. Yeah.
But the point being is they say this isn't a real league, no one really gives a shit, this is stupid, the play sucks, and all this kind of stuff. I think, personally, the real culprit with the WNBA isn't that women's basketball is bad and no one wants to watch it, because guess what? They just got 18.7 million people to watch it.
And apparently everyone enjoyed it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The problem is the WNBA can't market the fucking sport. That's the problem. And the fact that they play in summer.
I would say, I didn't know that. So I would say the summer thing is an issue. Number two, I would say their marketing is getting better. I would like to revert to the previous conversation of this, and I'm not trying to. I can't. What's her name? The white girl's name?
Caitlin Clark.
Caitlin Clark. I am not trying to. I am in awe of Caitlin Clark.
NCAA leader in the history of scoring.
You can take nothing from her, and she has a wonderful career in front of her. But, if they had been promoting Brittany Griner or any of these other fantastic basketball players that I'm sure have a backstory reputable enough to market, shall we say, you would probably. And maybe it's going back to what you're saying of marketing. You know, maybe it's all, you know,
the number one problem, and no one wants to talk about it. It's right. The elephant in the room.
What is it?
There's not a significant NBA player that has come out as gay. A good percentage of WNBA players are openly gay.
Yeah, absolutely, a bunch.
And as much as we love to talk about how progressive people are in this country,
right? Oh, that's interesting.
That's a very, you know. That's a difficult hill to climb.
Sexism, and you talk
about
yeah.
well, you talk about well. First racism, off, you have yeah. sex. Well, first off, yeah, the big three.
The big three. Yeah,
you're fighting against with that.
That's really
in a sense of you know, obviously, a good percentage of the players in the league are black.
Black women.
A good women.
Yeah.
So you're fighting racism and misogyny.
Yeah.
Then you're fighting the fact that a good percentage of their stars, not just players on the league,
stars.
Are openly gay.
You're 100% right.
And they play in the summer when no one's interested in basketball.
Because you were saying something when we were getting on. It's like, you know, people are out with their kids. You know, it's like summer, the kids are off, you know. So it's vacation time.
I mean, sports, if you really want to talk, we're entering into a great period of sports. Because you just ended March Madness, again, with the UConn Huskies dominating. Yay. But in about 2 weeks, the NBA playoffs is going to start. The NHL playoffs are going to start. So now you're going to have about a month and a half of playoffs. And playoffs are awesome. If you don't like hockey, trust me, you like playoff hockey. If you don't like, you know, NBA basketball, trust me, playoff basketball is completely different than watching a Clippers-Nuggets game in the middle of January.
Yeah, so full disclosure.
Full.
You know, through different various points of my corporate career, I have had privy to either being access to or owning season tickets. Actually had the last season tickets I owned was for the Clippers. And did it for business purposes, taking clients and things like that. Going to a live game is always fantastic.
Of course.
It's so different than watching it on TV.
And you really get...
I would much rather go to a live game than watch one on TV. Now, I agree with you. As a person who is not an avid sports fan, I do consider myself to be a playoffs fan. Like, if you know, I am more apt, if you will, to go watch playoff games or meet my friends like somebody like you who wants to go catch a game someplace during the playoffs than I am any other time of the year. You know, I went to my first Blackhawks game. What was it, not even a month and a half ago. Mm-hmm. You know, and that was really great. You know, just so it was like, I've never been to a hockey game before. It was exciting. You know, we won, you know. I think I was the only one of only three or four black people in the entire arena. You know,
was this the Kings?
Yeah, the Kings downtown. Yeah, Kings downtown. Yeah,
Here's the thing. Yeah, the I went to a couple when the Pittsburgh Penguins came to the, and I will say this. I was surprised about the number of Hispanic fans.
A lot of Hispanic fans, yes.
Because I think, to be honest with you, because they love soccer.
Yeah.
And hockey is essentially soccer
on
really,
ice.
Yeah, on ice really fast.
Yeah, yeah.
It is something to where I think they can get it a little better than, let's say, well, I mean, there's a lot of Hispanic fans at NFL games.
Oh, like absolutely.
When I go to Rams games.
I mean, Hispanic football and the Hispanic community are tight. I mean, the Raiders are like, you know.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to bring this up. We were talking about WNBA players. So I Googled openly gay WNBA players. First one that came up was Brittany Griner.
Yeah. Right.
That's Brittany Griner.
Yep, absolutely.
I'm not trying to be whatever. Like, to an average American, that picture is scary.
That's sad.
Because they're sitting there going, you're telling me that's a woman, but that's a very masculine woman.
I don't agree
with
that.
To market that?
I mean, she's a woman. She's a 7 foot tall woman.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I just think, you know, when you listen, there are plenty of women with masculine features.
I agree.
That are straight.
Absolutely.
You know, and
but I'm saying from a marketing standpoint.
No, I understand what you're saying, and you know, so I totally get that. So, and I'm not saying that's your opinion. What I'm saying is, though, it's like it goes back to, if those were, I don't know, man. I agree with you. I just think that the racism and the perspective of
openly gay WNBA.
Sure,
I get it's you. Literally all their stars.
Yeah, it's all their stars. No, I get it. And I mean, but it's like, you know, you're demonizing these women because they have strong features. You're demonizing them because they're tall. You're demonizing. I mean, this it's just ugh.
It's the level of play is actually very, very good. Is it the NBA? No, but guess what? Men's college basketball isn't the NBA.
No.
If people love to watch, you know, the top high school players play.
Absolutely.
That's not the NBA.
Not at all.
But if you're speaking to me, like if we're sitting in a marketing studio, if we're sitting there going, hey, I'm the head of the WNBA, what's our biggest issue? I go, first and foremost, we got to move the sport from the summer to the winter. That's when people are going to be more interested in basketball.
Right.
If there's anything about the women's college basketball is it happens the same time as the men.
Right.
And that gives it legitimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to sit there and say, and we can't deny it, we have to find a way to market, and maybe it's to market to more progressive people and to market to more progressive cities. And I think that's why they're going nuts for Caitlin Clark from Iowa.
Right.
Because they're sitting there going, it's like Larry Bird. It's the great white hope.
It's just frustrating.
Of course.
I get what you're saying, you know, and it's just frustrating. I feel very, it's just, you know, you have, and again, I'm not a big sports fan, so I, you know.
But sports are so ingrained in this country. Anybody who sits there and says they're not a big sports fan, and I agree. I'm not a big NASCAR fan.
Mm-hmm.
But I realize its importance to a large percentage of Americans. You know, I'm not a giant soccer fan, but I realize the importance of it internationally. I realize the importance of the World Cup internationally. I respect the Messis and the Ronaldos of the world. It's an absolute incredible sport. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I know who are the top three teams in the English Premier League right now.
Right, exactly. Speaking of which.
Of the English Premier League?
No. Speaking of which, I have to give a shout out to my adopted Premier League, Manchester City. You know, they are my chosen brothers, Kev and Damien, are from Manchester, and so I'm by default. And I've been to a City game before, so that was really amazing.
Because it's the big rivalry is them and Man U.
Yeah,
it's beyond. Like Clippers, Lakers.
No, I went to this. I went to this sports bar, this pub that kind of, it's like a cross between a Shire. You know what I mean? It's like the Heald Green, in Manchester, in City, this is the week before I went to a game, and motherfuckers started fighting that bar over the game. Like, you've never seen a bar brawl like this. Just, like, fist fights all over the fucking place. Falling out into the fucking street. You know what I'm saying? And then they're fucking drunk. And fucking, it's just, like, just English are fucking out of their minds.
Well,
they're completely out of their minds.
It's an expectation,
and then the same thing
at Dodger Stadium, a giant Dodger game or a Dodger Padre game, there will be fights.
Absolutely right, right.
And
that's what they're saying.
The stupidest thing is, as an avid sports fan, as someone who has cheered for the opposing team in various venues across the country. I mean, you want to talk about, I've been in Baltimore and cheered for the Steelers. I've been in Cleveland and cheered. I've been in Buffalo. I've been in New York. I've been in Cincinnati. I've been in Chicago.
You've been around.
To get in a fight
I get
over
it.
Grown men who don't even know you exist, who are getting paid, is the silly. So you want to talk here to help?
Well, hold on. Let me finish the story. So there's like at least 10, 12 fights in this bar. The bar fits like maybe 300 people maximum. Okay, dozens of fights every. And they're like, oh, this is nothing. Wait till you get to the stadium. I was like, oh, it can't be worse. It's like, I don't even understand how they're a country. After that, I was like,
the English are a country.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of fighting that was going on inside. I'm just being sarcastic, the amount of fighting that was going on in that place. I was like, there's roving gangs. There's like, then you have the guys who are like, what are they? The rugby guys, these big brick shit house guys walking off broken noses looking to fight.
One of the things about, I watched this documentary called How the Beatles Changed Everything.
Mm.
And again, whenever I hear somebody go, oh, this band changed everything, I always have this very kind of like, how does a band change everything? But one of the things that I thought was very interesting is they brought up the fact that in England, because they do have they have royalty, they have a system that's been in place for thousands of years,
right,
to where if you were born X, you will die Y. It is just how it is, and it's just, that's one of the reasons why America was such an experiment, where we're just kind of like, at least we'll have the opportunity to where if you don't have
every four years,
but even you.
So by the way, vote people, because democracy is take good.
Yeah, but if you don't have a lord or duke in front of your name, who gives a shit? You can figure it out. But that's why the Beatles were so big. Because these were normal people from a town in Liverpool that was not, Liverpool, I've been had people describe as like pretty much either England's Boston or England's Philadelphia. Like
Liverpool is a beautiful city. It's
but I mean, it's not London, which is their New York.
Right. I would agree with that. Sure.
It's a coastal town. Yeah. It's a navy. It's a Siemens town. It's whatever.
Beautiful city.
Yeah.
Great culture. Great people. Yeah. Great food.
But it's one of those things to where it's not a thing to that people would say, oh, the next, the next royalty will come from these people.
Yeah.
And the fact that Paul McCartney is now pretty much to the level or maybe exceeded the English Duke and Duchess and royalty, and the fact that now you've had them joined by Elton John Led Zeppelin and the Rolling Stones and all these people. If you ever wonder why all of these people came from England, it's because you lived in a society to where the whole world told you, you will never amount to anything except a blue collar nothing. And these guys found a way through music to make themselves into modern royalty.
Mm.
And with that, which is why they created all this amazing music. It's the same reason why you sit there and say, why is there so many great, bring it.
Yeah, hear me out on this.
Okay, because you're going to be wrong.
Yeah, I get it. You know, here's the thing. In England, when you got like, you talk to the old heads, like Damien's parents' age people, okay, they do not, as much, they revere the monarchy for what it is, okay? But they do not live their lives as in, like, half of England could give a fuck if the monarchy was there. Probably even more percentage, a larger
percentage. And it raises it every year.
You know what I'm saying? And
it you
know,
rises
so,
every year.
So, it, but so there's a large percentage of English that could give a fuck if it existed or not. And of that percentage, a lot of them are like, why are you spending all this money for all of this bullshit? So to say that, you know, and because they have prime ministers and because they have parliament and because they are a global leader in economics and healthcare and everything like that, you know, when you go there, and I've been to Liverpool, I've been to Cream, I've partied all over that fucking country. I've been to England 13, 14 times, you know, and, you know, they don't look at, the, you know, like every country, they have their arrogance in their own way, and they do have their arrogance with the royalty. And like when you go to their 5-star hotels and shit like that, you know, you got the hats, the jackets, the whole thing. I mean, it's, you know, it's a thing to be seen for sure. It's definitely it's their culture.
Jerry Seinfeld one time said that's why they're great at theater.
Yeah,
because that's what their country is. It's a giant theater,
right? They've been putting on pomp and circumstance for centuries.
Yeah,
but they have everything in their country and every availability to become a billionaire there as we do here. You know, and that has existed for an extraordinary long period of time.
And not really.
For the last hundred years, England has had a system where most people, if you busted your ass, was able to do something. That's how they are where they're at as a global economic power right now. There was
and you don't want to bring up colonization?
Well, you can go that. We can talk about racism, Africa. There's not a country on the planet that does not have blood on their hands.
Oh, when it comes to England's racism, got the most, bro.
France. Germany,
England's got
France,
talk
Germany,
to an Indian.
France, Germany,
talk to an
Spain.
Irishman about
dude,
that.
I'm sorry, but all of the European countries have plenty of blood on their hands. There's not one of them that has spared millions of lives
compared to the English Empire.
I'm not. If you're talking about killing niggas, I'm not happy with one, and you're trying to differentiate between 1,500 million to however 100 million from all these other countries is barbaric. The entire system. Do not let any country off the hook from Holland to England to Spain to any France to the United States on the shit that they
England
did with racism.
Is an island with literally almost no natural resources.
I get it.
The only reason it
my
has
mother's any... Jamaican. They used to be. They were a Jamaican colony up until their a colony of England up until like the 70s. I get it. I do not need education on England. But what I'm saying is, when you go to England and you have a conversation with these people and you really get to know them, they don't give a fuck about the monarchy, and they do have every access to be able to become rich as we do here. It may not be the same. It may not be what we call democracy or capitalism, but they have very much, just like France, very much the opportunity to get paid. It's just different, like every other country. That's why they're our number one trading. That's why they're our number one partner globally. That's why they have such. That's why they may not have all these resources, but they're able to command so much money.
The reason why,
because they're that good at it.
Well, they are very good at it, and one of the reasons why is because, like someone says the English the Roman Empire became a church, the English Empire became a bank. And they are very good at it.
Yeah, whatever. I'm not here to differentiate how every country makes their money. What I'm here to say, all I was addressing was, you know, the idea. A lot of Americans have this perspective that English revere the monarchy, and they do not.
But they
by
still,
and large,
until very, very recently, very, very recently, and still to the now the biggest problem. If you ever read up on England and all their billionaires or anybody like that, they typically move here.
Right.
Because of taxes.
You know, again,
I mean, the Stones wrote an album in France because they were tax. They couldn't go back to England, or they were gonna have to pay like.
Yeah,
90%
I don't. Yeah, I'm not familiar with all their tax codes and stuff like that. I'm just
expensive.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I mean, listen, you know, New York is expensive. Los Angeles is expensive. London is expensive. Paris, Singapore, Hong Kong.
I'm talking about their federal taxes.
Yeah, I mean, like, no, I guess you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But speaking of which, okay, so I've found interesting was, and we were talking about going from gay athletes,
mm-hmm.
Let's jump on to gay comedians. Did you see the article about Gerard Carmichael discussing Chappelle?
No, I did not.
Ah, yes, indeed. Gerard Carmichael is shedding more light on his riff with fellow comedian Dave Chappelle. Back in the 22 article, Carmichael called out Chappelle for his anti-trans jokes he made on his 21 Netflix special, The Closer. He took it as fuck Dave Chappelle because he's an egomaniac. The poor thing star said in an interview published Monday. He wanted me to apologize to him publicly for some shit. Carmichael went on to clarify his previous GQ comments about the half-baked star, adding that Chappelle is not revealing anything personal about himself, and he's removed from what he is talking about. I think he is smarter than that, and deeper than that, and has more interesting thoughts, the comedian said. Carmichael also claimed that Chappelle mockingly called his 22 HBO special Rothaniel, in which he publicly came out as gay, as the bravest special in 1996. Chappelle special reps didn't call for it. Yeah, okay. So basically, Carmichael and I didn't even know about this. Carmichael and Dave Chappelle have a beef. And Carmichael is calling out Chappelle. And what I found was to be the most powerful statement in that, which I felt was very well said, was that he is removed from what he is talking about. I agree with that.
I'm thinking of Chappelle's specials, and you're absolutely right. He rarely talks about his kids. He rarely talks about his marriage.
Right.
He rarely talks about his upbringing other than to just kind of glance over it. I mean, it mostly is...
Right. Yep.
You know, you're right. It is not a very personal... Especially his last couple.
He's very removed from the... Yeah.
Now,
and especially when he's talking about the gay stuff. Now, I'm going to say this, and I want to get your opinion about this, okay. this perspective. I am a very, you know, I am very pro-gay in my act and in who I am as a person, in case you haven't noticed, right?
I would say you're beyond pro-gay.
You know, and so, right, in case you haven't noticed,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, I'm the pro-gay person.
Right.
You're the gay person.
Yeah, right.
You're living your life.
You get it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so... But I do believe that if Chappelle wants to talk the shit that he wants to talk, he's more than happy to talk the shit he wants to talk. If you don't like it, turn it off. Right? Now, Chappelle is a very large voice.
Yes.
I do understand that. And I do kind of worry that it influences people like Rogan does in a negative way. But ultimately, in my heart of hearts, the reason why I do this podcast with the great Mike Sasson, because not only we're here to help, but is because I believe firmly that people need to be able to objectively think and figure things out for themselves. You can't monitor what people say and worry about how everybody takes it in every situation. At a certain point, the word police and the cancel culture just becomes bullshit. You know, if somebody's flagrantly racist, if somebody is a neo-Nazi, if somebody is a disgusting fucking sexist, oh, absolutely, fuck them people. But if somebody's just, if somebody's a comedian telling a bunch of shitty jokes, or if somebody is a social commentary like the pigs of, like the Fox News pigs, come on.
So
who's doing more damage, right?
Okay. I think there's different sections that we're talking about. The Fox News people, that's propaganda.
Right.
That's just flat out where, you know, it was a joke today. They actually did do this where they were talking about the eclipse. We're broadcasting this as the day that the great eclipse happened. And they led with the fact that because it's not as cloudy as they thought it was going to be, that it's going to be, they could see it in Texas. And that led right into their border scare thing.
Right,
like, right. Literally, they took something that had nothing to do with the southern border and turned it into a southern border. I mean, that's their motif.
Right.
But then, and I agree with you in this, I am such a believer in stand-up as an art and comedy as essential.
Right.
It's not a frivolous thing. It's essential.
It's essential.
And like
more than your barista.
Like, to be honest with you, it's like someone said there was a new movie coming out, or if it hasn't already come out, called Civil War. And in the movie, they're talking about that it's a modern telling of a modern America that literally devolves into the second Civil War.
Right.
And the lead characters in the movie are journalists.
Mm-hmm.
And when the guy was shopping the script around Hollywood, one of the notes that he got was, change the main characters from journalists. No one likes journalists. And he sat there and he was just like, saying you don't like journalists or you hate journalists is like saying you hate doctors.
Right.
Or you hate, you know, or even you hate police officers or you hate whatever. We need good blank. We need good journalists. We need good cops. We need good lawyers. We need good teachers. We need good everything. We got to get rid of the shitty ones, but we need good everything.
Right.
So to sit there and say, I hate journalists, it's stupid. It's the same thing with comedians. We need more great comedians.
Right.
We need to call out the shitty ones.
And
now with Dave Chappelle, here's what's happening with Dave Chappelle. Everyone has their moment.
Right.
Everyone has their thing when they're in the groove and they're producing just specials that are, I mean, everyone had it. Chris Rock had it. Louis C.K. had it. You know, I mean, George Carlin had it. Yeah, you know, yeah. Richard Pryor had it. Everybody had that 3 to 5 years when they were just the GOAT. They were the one that everyone looked to and said, that's the one. What's happening right now is I think we're getting to the end of Dave Chappelle's, if it hasn't happened already.
Right.
Because he's getting to the point to where he's so in love with his own thoughts, and everyone is not enough Jared Carmichael's are challenging him. There's starting to be some people coming out,
right,
sitting there going, yo, this is trash.
Yeah.
He's going to clubs in LA and New York and just talking shit for an hour and a half, gumming up the system. Like, people are talking shit. People are saying this is over and he's got to regroup. He's got to go back to Ohio, or he's got to go back to the clubs in New York, or coming out here to LA and really start grinding again. Cause he's not grinding anymore. He's got to become more personal. He's got to get to that next level.
What I think is going on is, I think you nailed that. I agree with everything you say. I hadn't thought of it in that way. What I have thought for a while is that he's not hungry anymore.
Yeah.
And it happens to
everyone.
Yeah.
That was everyone.
And, you know, and what Gerard was saying just really struck me, because it is true. He's so detached from his material. And
because he doesn't have to dig anymore.
And ultimately, because so many comedians are like that. They get on stage, people laugh automatically because that's who they are, you know, and they deliver these, you know, you see the Netflix is littered with these comedians.
Well, that's one of the reasons names,
and they're just like they're stand up, their hours garbage.
Everyone got nuts, at least in the comedy community, about 2 weeks ago when Attell released his special.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the joke about it is it was only about 35 minutes.
Right.
But it was 35 minutes of just jokes.
Right.
Just well-written, well-performed.
Right.
Professional comedian delivering jokes.
Fire.
And everyone was like, oh my God, this is, it was such a revelation of like, oh my God, a Netflix special can just be 35 minutes of just delivering quality jokes.
Right.
And I think that is, We're just we're the Dave Chappelle has a choice right now. He can just continue just to produce specials, and maybe he's okay with that. Maybe he's fine. Maybe he's made his money, and he's artistically he's produced his, because there are musical acts
right
that are just, yeah, they produce an album.
It'll be interesting. Just, it'll be interesting to see what happens moving forward. That's
or does
sure.
he, like you I said, think, have that hunger to say, no, fuck you, I'm going to go after this again, and I'm going to produce a fire hour.
My humble opinion, I think because, believe it or not, all things considered, our country is starting to gravitate to what's real again. Slowly but surely, there is a frustration with the bullshit. And I don't, you know, I'm not even going to talk on politics right now, although that is a perfect example of, that is the hyperextended example of what I'm talking about. But, you know, if you look at, like, the popularity of a lot of reality TV is now kind of like a backwards dim. The Kardashians, who gives a fuck anymore? Okay, yeah, whatever. You know, I'm sure they got another show. Oh, those are Kardashians. They're not. Paris Hilton is like a has been. Like, you don't know. You don't even care.
And the PC thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, the PC thing.
It had its peak probably about 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
It's now gotten to a point to where the same people are making the same noise.
But
at this point, it doesn't. Right. Nothing happens.
Right.
It's
absolutely.
Just, you know, I agree. You write it out. You just ignore it. You go forward.
And what's happening in our comedy? And I just did a great show this past weekend in Tachapia.
Yeah.
130-140 people sold out.
Yeah.
Just three black people in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably 65% Republican.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had that place upside down. Just so much fun. They were interacting. You know, when I did my bit about gays ruining the sanctity of marriage, this woman that, damn it, she guarantees she got a Trump shirt in her fucking closet. You know what I'm saying? It was like, it was ruined before the gays.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, every joke that I did, the entire audience was completely on board with the points. You know, and it was like, you know what? The news and people with all the bullshit, they don't know America.
No.
You know what I mean? They don't know people.
Absolutely
when
not.
When you don't talk down to somebody, when you don't make them feel like an idiot, and there's this big thing right now where, you know, and again, the politics, where, and Chappelle kind of represents this, where it's like, oh, let's talk down on these groups of people because we can make ourselves look stronger and bigger and smarter and wiser than the other people because we talk down to them. You know, by making these shitty trans jokes or making trans jokes, you know, and making them, I can make this other person the butt of the joke. By marginalizing these people, by doing this, doing that, I can make profit. I can get likes and clicks and advertising dollars or whatever that case may be. But ultimately right now, I think people, they want to hear something that's organic and true and that means something.
Here's what I would, again, let's help Dave Chappelle out.
We're here to help.
I view comedy very similar, again, because it's essential. Very similar to being a doctor. And doctors, when they take an oath, I think it's called the Hippocratic Oath.
Hippocratic Oath, yes.
And pretty much it boils down to do no harm.
Right, correct.
And when you perform, when you tell a joke, do you want to make life harder for someone that is maybe going through some shit? Or do you want to bring joy?
You have just nailed it on the head. Continue.
So, and that's something that I always at least strive for. And I fail sometimes because I'm a human being, but at least I'm trying.
Right.
At the end of the day, there's some person, some kid, some guy, some woman, some person, whatever, out there, and they're dealing with something.
Yep.
Whether they're dealing with, you know, hey, I live in a town where who I am is not as accepted as I want to be.
Right.
But I don't have a way out. And so I have to make the best of it. Or, you know, I have to deal with, you know, the you know, I'm feeling certain ways and my religion and my parents are telling me that I'm wrong. And like you said it earlier, Dave Chappelle is a powerful voice.
Yeah, he does.
And so what I would say to you, Dave, is, okay, you with your powerful voice gets up there and says something terrible about trans people. Well, guess what? That guy that's trying to go through something and doesn't have the power to fight back, just has to deal with the day-to-day world, now has to deal with that.
Yep.
And you created that.
And that's the point, by the way. And that's the point. And I,
And should you want to be the person who continues to create that?
There was his first, that one special, his first special that he did, that trans joke where, you know, the people, the all the gays are in the car and the trans people are like, you know, where are we going to go? You know, which I thought was a brilliant joke. Because of the transphobia that is within the gay community. And you could tell that his trans friend who had passed, you know, probably informed him to help him write that joke.
Yeah.
Now, and I defended that joke to a gay couple that I'd met, mm-hmm. That were offended by that joke. And I also conveyed the opinion that I just expressed and that me and you were kind of talking about right now. Now his newest stuff, like the last two or whatever, three, I just think it's just sloppy and lazy.
You hit the nail on the head. You know, I was just thinking, if you didn't say it, I was about to say it.
You know,
it's just fucking lazy.
You know, it's, I think, like, and I'll, you know, if you want to be a controversial comedian, which he is, had he done what Chris Rock did back in the day with, I love black people, I hate niggas, a joke that he notoriously had to work for, I guess, over a year and a half to 2 years before it became funny. If, and going back to what we're talking about being hungry, if he had took those jokes and worked them for a year and a half, you know, and got them super, super tight where they actually had a point where they were supportive of the trans community, or at least pointing out the hypocrisy of the discrimination towards trans people, then you would have had a fucking fantastic
Because you know
joke.
About that bit that Chris Rock did, and it was the bit that made him, because it was so brilliant and it got to the heart of things. Yeah. What it spoke to was the common humanity of people.
Yep.
Like Jerry Seinfeld one time told had a conversation with Chris Rock. And Chris Rock had a joke about black porn.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the, you know, that white people have Playboy and the girls are airbrushed and they're beautiful and they're in the meadow and it's beautiful. Black people, we get the girl who doesn't look like she knows that she's being the pictures taken,
right,
and you
I've
see her stretch
yeah.
marks,
yeah.
and there's a gun wound and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jerry Seinfeld came up to him after he told that joke, and he sat there and he goes, "You just opened my mind to something. That not only do black people have their own pornography, but that they know that it's not as good and they don't like it, but it's the only ones that's catered to them." And that made Jerry Seinfeld go, "Oh, you mean there might be other things in this world that..." Because a stat that I always bring up that blew my mind, and I've quoted it on this show. In 1963 or 64, Gallup interviewed a bunch of Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, this is pre-Civil Rights Bill. This is pre, you know, all the things that there was going on. And they asked average Americans, "In your community, are black people discriminated in the areas of education, employment, and housing?" 66% of Americans in 1964 said no.
Well, of course not. Listen, you're not saying anything that any black person doesn't know. I mean, you know.
But the concept is if you...
That's what they probably say. They probably hold the same numbers today.
Yeah. But if you are going to be the person that is going to go up and just say to the people that have the negative idea of trans through ignorance, hey, you're right. Yeah, there's a lot of money there.
Right.
There's a lot of money there. But you're not helping. You're not moving the conversation forward.
You're 100% right.
You're just trying to bank on this person's ignorance and this person's bigotry.
You're 100% right. And for Chappelle, he should be trying to call attention to a lot of the inequality that still is going on in the country today. He should be towards black people. He should be talking about all, you know, again, his family, what he's learned about his wife, his kids,
himself,
you know, you know, he barely mentions that his wife is Asian. What is it like having an Asian wife in Ohio? I would love to hear a story, you know, there's, you know, what was that like?
He did have the one great joke, and this was like when Trump got elected. He was at the polling place in Ohio, and the guys at the polling place in this rural town in Ohio said, Trump fights for us. That's why I love him. And he thought to himself, no, I'm rich. Trump fights for me.
Right. I remember that statement.
And yeah, I was just kind of like, yeah, that's good.
Right.
It's in you.
Yeah.
You have the ability to call out bullshit.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Being lazy right now.
Yeah, he is. Speaking of which, the night that Trump won, the weekend that Trump won, Saturday Night Live put on Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, Chappelle. It was both of them.
Yeah. Yeah, both, but Chris Rock and Dave Chappelle, and they both did stand up, yeah. And they both, spoke to America, and. Going back to what you were saying earlier about how stand-up is necessary, in that moment, you had two of the most important voices in not only comedy, but of African Americans on stage giving a perspective about a president wherein the country was under extraordinary unrest. And I couldn't help but think back to the time when James Brown got on the radio during the Watts race riots and spoke, and the riots calmed down. You know, what Chappelle and Chris Rock used to represent in American culture, and what Chris Rock still does, but he's not the Chris Rock of the 90s, but he's still very relevant. But Chappelle, he's trading in his relevance for laughs. You know, Chris Rock special, let me tell you something. That boy went out there and he did it. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Chris Rock was like, fuck this. If I'm putting out a special, this motherfucker's going to be fire. I may be older, but this special's going to be fire. And he went up there and you could see the look on his face when he was done. He was like, fuck yes. You know what I mean?
He did it live.
And he balls it takes to do that. You know what I'm saying? And he flubbed a word or two, but you know what? The motherfucker kicked that shit for Chris Rock, right? And Dave Chappelle could never do that. Dave Chappelle could never do what Chris Rock did. I don't think he could. I don't think he could.
There's one of the things about whenever you're scouting an athlete when he's transitioning from college to the pros,
mm-hmm.
Scouts will often have to ask and try to figure out, how will this person react when I give them $10 million?
Right.
Are they going to say, fine, I'm good financially. Now it's, I want to win. I want to be a great player. I want to be a Hall of Famer. I want to win championships. Right. You know, the Michael Jordans, the Tom Brady's, the Mary Lemieux's, those type of guys. Or are you going to sit there and say, well, shit, I made it. I got $10 million. I don't have to do shit. I don't have to work anymore. And that happens a lot.
Absolutely.
Some NBA player, buys a car, buys the house for his mom, his sister, his cousins, everybody. And then all of a sudden he's just kind of like, Yeah, what am I? Why am I going to practice?
Yeah, I've already made it. Yeah.
And you have to figure that out.
Yeah.
And right now, Dave Chappelle has to figure out what he's going to be for the next 30 years of his career.
Yeah.
Because there is this, and this is the saddest thing. There are a lot of comics, because they refuse to actually grow, that their angle that they want to take is to essentially go to the people that don't like what's happening in modern world, basically, you know, pander to them and go through the, like, the B and C markets of the world, make a good amount of money, but basically be the voice of, oh, you know, these wokes and these progressives and, you know, this, it, and that what they will be for the next 30 to 40 years, when at one point they were actually legitimately funny
and
they just gave it up.
And, you know, we have to wrap it up, but I'll say this. I'll close with this. First of all, I agree with everything you said. And I'm just going to say this. There are comedians out there like George Wallace, like Damon Wayans Sr.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit. Okay. There are comedians that are still throwing fucking haymakers every time they get on stage. And, you know, and then there are those with that we're talking about. There's a lot of those guys from the 90s, you know, some of the Kings and Crown of Comedy crowd, you know, some of all that, that they're just a shell.
Yeah.
They're just a literal shell. They're like a 3D mime of who they used to be.
You want to end the show with a great George Wallace story?
Yeah.
Okay. Heard this on another podcast.
Mm.
So, little known fact, George Wallace and Jerry Seinfeld were like roommates for like 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved from New York to LA at the same time.
Mm.
And one of the first things they did when they moved to LA was they went to a psychic, palm reader.
Uh-huh.
So they go to the George Wallace goes and he goes in first. And they're like sitting at the table. The palm reader looks at George Wallace's hand and goes, oh, you are going to be very successful. You're going to be incredibly rich. You're going to make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what yours. And then put the hand down. And he took Jerry Seinfeld's hand and he looks at it and goes, holy shit. You thought you're going to be rich. Look at this guy right here. And I thought it was just like a joke. And it was actually on another podcast. He goes, I've actually asked both George Wallace and Jerry Seinfeld. Uh-huh. He goes, that story is true.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. I'll finish with one last one. I met George Wallace at Netflix is a joke last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he was upstairs at the Laugh Factory.
Yeah.
And
the biggest green room in the world.
Right.
You get lost at the Laugh Factory.
You're 100% right. But here's George Wallace. He's on one of those tables on the side.
Yeah.
Right. And he's sitting there and he's writing jokes. Mm-hmm. Okay. He's writing jokes. And I'm passing by and I was just like, I was George Wallace. I just got to meet you. My name is Ron Bush. I was like, man, are you writing jokes? And he goes, man, I'm always writing jokes. You know? And I was like, okay. I was like, I love this. You know, I was like, I love that. I was like, you know, I didn't even expect it. I was like, man, look. He goes, you got to love comedy, man. Something like that.
It's the eternal quest.
So hold on, man. This motherfucker gets on stage. Okay, he's up like three comedians, and he gets when he goes, listen, he goes, first of all, you know, I usually do, he goes, if you don't know who I am, I gotta, you know, he gives his little credentials, right? He does in Vegas, and he goes, now, there's been a lot of young comedians up there, they've been real funny, and I don't usually come up here and start cussing, but I figure I'm gonna fuck these motherfuckers up tonight, because I'm gonna bring some shit on y'all motherfuckers, and this motherfucker went in. He went in every fourth joke. He goes, so I just flew in from Cairo. And he has this thing. He goes, I just flew in from New York. And you're just like, this motherfucker is crazy. Mostly clean.
Yeah.
Mostly clean. You could tell he was cursing just to curse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Balls ass, funny, really well-written jokes. Just like, wow. And then he's coming from someplace else. You know what I mean? But the narrative of he's just coming at you with, from all these directions, and he's changing locations, and you know what I mean, you know, but he's in your living room. It was brilliant stand up. And if God gives me the opportunity to be healthy enough to do stand up until that man's age, and just like same thing with Damon Wayans Sr., God damn it, that's the type of comedian I need to be.
So, what does that teach anyone that's listening right now?
God damn it.
It's out there.
It's out there, baby.
The real shit's out there.
The real shit is out there.
Don't rely on Netflix to give you what you think.
Go to live comedy.
Go out there. Trust me, there's someone out there in your town.
Right.
If you're lucky enough to live in New York or LA or Chicago, great. But in your town right now, trust me, there's a comedy show, and you will go see a comedian. It might be only one on a show of 10.
Right.
But there's one comedian that's going to change your perspective.
Right.
That's going to give you a little morsel, a little gift. They're out there.
Right.
I'm going to sound like John Rambo. Find them.
I agree with you 100%.
I'll find you.
I agree with you 100%. I agree with you. Well, listen, first of all, this has been another episode. By the way, holy shit, dude. We had the eclipse. The eclipse was today. Yeah. As I told you, I took pictures. I didn't look at it directly, but it was kind of bullshit because it was still sunny.
Yeah.
It was better coverage on the news.
Yeah.
And the next one's going to happen in 2044. So we'll be here for that.
Yeah.
But this is episode 50. This is episode 50 of Mike and Ron Here to Help.
And I will say this.
Mm.
I hope we get to do another 50 more.
I guarantee it.
And this is from the gods, from the bottom of my heart. I look forward to every one of these.
These are fun.
Because we do have to, you know, we're both busy people. We are grown men with jobs and comedy and the whole shabam.
Yes.
And we got to move things around. Yeah. We got to figure it out. But trust me, there is nothing more interesting than having a great conversation with an incredibly interesting human being. And I get to have one with Ron Bush.
Mr. Mike says, and I agree with you, don't try and make me cry. I'm anyway.
Yeah, because we got to record another one.
About 10 seconds. Yes, absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been another episode of the episode 50 of Mike and Ron
Here to Help.
Mike and Ron, Here to Help.